we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Restore Health and Counseling salutes the men and women in uniform who've answered the call for our freedoms. Let's give them the hero's welcome they deserve as they have fought hard to restore peace. America's troops are our angels of protection, so stand up and salute them proudly. That's from Restore Health and Counseling at 4705 Paris Street, serving Northeast Denver with complete substance abuse counseling for adolescents to adult and for private as well as professional drug, alcohol screening and treatment and rehabilitation. Visit us at www.rhctherapy.com or call 303-373-1188.
Whether you're in automotive, sporting goods, hardware, health, wellness, electrical, electronics, construction, carpet cleaning, legal, or animal care, and offer exceptional customer service and provide quality services or goods, you're honest, reliable, and professional. If you have a business, we have the customers. Let us put you in touch with our loyal, supportive, and dedicated listeners today. They're waiting to hear from you. It's inexpensive. It's effective. Call KHNC at 1-800-205-6245.
Well, Dr. Stan here this morning, and we're going to be talking to Deborah Davis, and we're going to be talking about cancer, her book, The War on Cancer, and basically it's so difficult for most Americans to believe that there really could be treatments out there and were not made available to the American people. And you can only understand what's going on today if you were to read my treatise. It's called The Population Control Agenda. If you haven't seen it, it's available on the Internet. Just type in Population Control Agenda. Population Control Agenda. I've read it. It's outdated. I wrote it, probably 10, 15 years ago. A lot of other people have picked up on it. And I'll bet it still will give you an overview of the explanation of what otherwise simply has no logical explanation. So with that in the background, let's go to Deborah. Good morning, Deborah. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Sam.
So why don't you pick up the story and tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how it was you came to write this book.
Well, The Secret History of the War on Cancer really was almost 20 years in the making, and it merely began when I was at the National Academy of Sciences at the U.S. With the National Research Council. We were asked to look at studies on tobacco and asbestos and vinyl chloride. And what I learned in looking at the history of research in those areas was that many governments understood the dangers of tobacco decades earlier. And I mean decades earlier. In 1930, the Argentinian government had an institute dedicated to the study of tobacco hazards. 1930. And yet, what the governments did, with the complete support of the tobacco industry, of course, was to encourage the consumption of tobacco as a way to generate revenue, and we also know that the consequences for health have been devastating. So what we did at the National Academy of Sciences was to review the science and decide whether or not we had sufficient proof that people were getting sick from tobacco. Remember, in the 1980s, you couldn't go anywhere without having tobacco to it, and people didn't think anything of it. Surgeons' conventions were full of smoke in the 1950s and 60s. So what I learned from that was that the way public policy had been set was to wait until we had proof that people were dying before taking action to prevent future death. And that high standard of proof came about because tobacco and asbestos in the same category were highly profitable. And because they were so profitable, governments in the UK and the US took the tax revenue from those products and did not take efforts to protect population health. And I realized that the war on cancer was officially announced by Richard Nixon at a time in the early 1970s when the US was fighting a very unpopular war in Southeast Asia. And so President Nixon declared two wars, one on cancer, the other on drugs. Neither has been particularly successful. While we've made remarkable progress for some types of cancer, such as childhood cancer that used to be deadly, and now children survive leukemia and brain tumors, we have not generally reduced death from some of the most common cancers. If you get lung cancer or pancreatic cancer or liver cancer, you're probably going to die of that disease, and sometimes within a short period of time. So I began to look into what was known about the secret history of the war on cancer. And what I discovered led me to conclude that government policy has been set requiring proof that people are already sick or dead from a danger before taking steps to curtail that danger. And I think that that's fundamentally the wrong approach to take, that we have to protect public health before we have definitive proof of human danger and harm.
But there could be no danger, there could be no question, no logical question that there is a relationship between tobacco and cancer of the lung and these many other cancers that come along with it, cancer of the lip and of the mucosa of the mouth and things of that sort, and they knew the relationship between smoking and all of these other cancers. So how did they justify not popularizing this and trying to stop it?
Well, the justification, believe it or not, was garbed in science. And it was argued that we didn't have proof. In the beginning, people said, well, those people who get lung cancer from smoking have a genetic weakness. And that was really widely popular, particularly among people like the director of the National Cancer Institute in the 1960s, who himself smoked 4 packs of cigarettes a day. So there was, you know, tobacco was a highly addictive compound. You may be old enough to have smoked yourself, although I know that a lot of doctors understood the dangers. Many others got hooked. In fact, believe it or not, the American Medical Association at one point accepted $10 million from the tobacco industry as part of an effort to make a safer cigarette. And the U.S. government spent millions of dollars to make a safer cigarette as well. So there was actually a lot of belief that we could just figure out how to make tobacco safe and that that would be a solution. And then there was the idea that we could also figure out a way to give people a pill to cure cancer. And if you could do that, if you really had a pill to cure cancer, then it wouldn't matter if you smoked because, after all, you just could take these pills. Well, it's turned out that the search for the pill to cure cancer has really proved to be much more difficult than anyone imagined. Now, I have great respect for my colleagues in oncology who are doing research today and the effort to try to identify new treatments in immunology and other ways of promoting healing. And they are using a wide range of new technologies to do this, including cell phone-like radiation, which is now being used to treat brain cancer and liver cancer. And we are making some progress, but the reality is the best progress against cancer has always been prevention. We see that now because there's been a drop in tobacco-related cancers in the United States and, frankly, in most countries that have instituted tobacco control policies. And we also see that there's been a drop in a wide range of other deaths with the drop in tobacco. And, for example, a drop in
hospitalizations
of children.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
Is it me, or have you noticed that personal service is becoming a thing of the past? Is a big store with untrained personnel, or going to a vitamin store and finding several brands of the same herbal product, all at different prices? You don't need to be an herbal expert at the Green Herb. We'll gladly help you decide which of the Green Herb's exclusive products will work for you and work better than anything you buy elsewhere. And we'll give you an old-fashioned money-back guarantee. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. Or go to our website at www.thegreenherb.com. It's the Green Herb's policy to give you small town service in the big city. And be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. This is Pastor Michael Golden. My wife Danny and I would like to invite you to join us at the Voice of Many Waters Congregation for Amikra HaKodesh, a holy convocation, every Saturday, Shabbat, at 1 p.m. at 3J's Christian Coffee House, 21 North Parish Avenue in Johnstown. We'll be having praise and worship, fellowship, midrash teaching and study time, followed by an oneg. Check out our website at www.voiceofmanywaters.org. That's voiceofmanywaters.org. Or call us at 1-303-522-3562. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful.
Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest this morning is Deborah Davis. We're talking about her book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. And, of course, the fact that certainly it was known, certainly 30 or 40 years ago, that there was a relationship between smoking and cancer. Cancer was very, very, the cancer of the lung was very, very rare in women. It was almost all in men because women didn't smoke. But after the tobacco company's very successful program to get women smoking, now we see soaring rates of cancer of the lung in women. And, of course, there has been an effort somewhat to discourage people from smoking, and yet, what is it, about 25% of the population still smokes, Deborah?
Well, it actually varies with the social class, where the highest rate of smoking is in the poorest people, unfortunately.
So basically, has the effort to discourage smoking had a significant impact on the incidence of smoking?
Yes, it has. Had a significant impact, and something that has actually had the impact is to increase taxes on the tobacco, and those taxes are then used for programs to promote cancer treatment and reduction of tobacco. So it's a kind of an interesting relationship you have here, because in the higher the taxes on tobacco, the fewer people smoke, and those taxes then generate revenue. So we are now down to, unfortunately, in high school students today, which is the most troubling statistic, 1 in 5 high school students is smoking tobacco today, despite all the efforts. Now, you know, teenagers have to rebel, and we hope that they will give up the habit. But what we know about the developing brain is that the earlier that the tobacco habit starts in the brain, particularly if it starts in the early teen years, the more addicted the person becomes. And that's why in World War II, during the fighting, literally the American Red Cross and the government gave out tobacco to these 18, 20-year-old kids in foxholes who were scared for their lives, and justifiably so. And nicotine can calm you during times of fear. And so these young men during World War II became addicted, the greatest generation. We actually did not do well by them in terms of encouraging them to smoke. And when you develop the habit, at that stage, you really can end up in great trouble and have great difficulty.
Is there really a serious danger from secondhand smoke? In other words, basically, if you're around somebody who's smoking.
Well, that was actually one of the big controversies at the National Academy of Sciences when I was the director of the Board on Environmental Studies and Toxicology. We were asked, actually, by the government and by the Reagan administration, by some brave people in that administration, to look into the question of whether or not tobacco smoke had an effect on people who were not smokers. Nowadays, of course, we all understand that. It's quite obvious. Tobacco smoke, side stream smoke, contains over 2,000 different chemicals, a number of which we know cause cancer in humans, such as benzene as one example. But back then, there was a legitimate debate, and the debate, again, was fostered by this industry that wanted to promote the notion that we had not enough science, and that we were uncertain. In fact, there was a famous memo that the tobacco industry wrote that said, doubt is our product. If we can raise doubt in the minds of people about the science, then we have succeeded. Because if people think there's any question about the science, then they will assume that it's wrong, that they can go on safely smoking. So what we learned was that children of smokers were hospitalized 4 to 6 times more frequently for serious infections, bronchitis, for example. And we learned that women who were married to smokers for 30 years had about a 30% increased chance of dying of lung cancer themselves, even though they didn't smoke at all. Now, when we looked at those data at the National Academy of Sciences, there was tremendous controversy about this, because, of course, tobacco was a major sponsor of sporting events. You may remember this, and the Marlboro Man rode off into the sunset. Of course, several of the Marlboro Men ended up dying of tobacco-related deaths themselves. And so what we did was to look at the data and say, look, we now have proof of human harm. Now, some of us believed that we could simply ignore this, while others maintain, look, there's enough evidence here that we ought to take steps. And the National Academy of Sciences reviewed the data and said, look, there is evidence that sidestream or environmental or passive tobacco smoke is a real hazard to people. And that led to a number of areas around the country saying, look, we don't want our children exposed to your tobacco smoke. You may have the right to smoke in your own home and do whatever you want, but you don't have the right to expose my children and the rest of us to this in a public space. And that's a very interesting discussion that we have in terms of individual liberty versus the social good. You can do whatever you want to yourself, but you really can't impose what you're doing to yourself on me. And I think that's a fundamental challenge that we face in a democracy on many issues. As you know, the other issue I'm working on now is cell phone radiation. And there the industry has also been promoting doubt. We're not really sure, you know, whether or not cell phones cause brain cancer. Well, let me tell you something. As a cancer epidemiologist, I am sure enough right now that cell phone radiation is a probable cause of cancer in humans. And therefore, I think we have to take steps to promote safety and awareness of the simple things you can do. And our website, www.environmentalhealthtrust.org, has lots of information on this, as well as information on tobacco and asbestos, by the way.
Well, now, what can people do other than just say, I'm not going to carry a cell phone?
They can use a cell phone with a headset, like the Minister of Digital Affairs in France announced yesterday, recommending that all phones come with headsets. Just this week, an Israeli high court ruled that all phone companies in Israel have to make available very cheap headsets because of the recognition that you should not be holding a phone directly next to your head. You should not carry a phone in your pocket. In fact, if you have an iPhone 4S and you go to settings, it tells you right there on the settings. You have to go through it. If you get to settings on your phone and you go to general and then you hit about and then you go to the bottom of about and you hit legal and the bottom of legal, you go to RF exposure. In your phone, it says, and I quote, to reduce exposure to RF energy, use a hands-free option such as the built-in speakerphone, the supplied headphones, or other similar accessories. Carry iPhone at least 10 millimeters away from your body to ensure exposure levels remain at or below the as-tested levels. It also notes that cases with metal parts may change the performance of the device, including its compliance with guidelines. In fact, metal cases, those fancy jeweled cases, make it worse, drive down the battery faster. There is a case that can protect you, and it's made by Pong Research, and it does diffuse the radiation. But even with the case, you do not want to keep the phone for long periods of time directly next to the body. And more information about this can also be found on our website, at environmentalhealthtrust.org, where you can find under resources very simple materials to download. For example, in Italy and Greece and Turkey and Finland, copies of a pamphlet available from Environmental Health Trust are being widely distributed through doctors' offices, as they are in Wyoming and in other locations around this country today. If you click on resources on our homepage, you will find the doctor's pamphlet available in all of those languages.
Well, you know, I have heard, and perhaps you can confirm whether this is true or not, but that for men who wear their cell phone on a belt, that their sperm count goes down. Is there any truth to that?
There is absolutely truth to that, and a number of different studies have shown it. Ashok Agarwal is a distinguished reproductive expert in male health and director of the infertility clinic at the Cleveland Clinic, one of the nation's most distinguished medical institutions. He's performed a series of studies where he noted that men who had their phones on for 4 hours a day in their pocket had almost half the sperm count of others. Research has been done in Greece and Turkey and China where they've taken samples of sperm from men. This is living sperm. And they put them in two different test tubes from the same man. They expose one test tube to cell phone radiation, and they do nothing to the other as a control. And they find significant increases in genetic damage to the sperm. Mitochondrial DNA is damaged. They also find that cell phone exposure makes sperm die faster, swim more poorly. And as you know, those are very important characteristics. The reason why a healthy man needs almost a half a million sperm in a single ejaculate is in order to make one healthy baby. You want the most vigorous sperm to survive and be the one that fertilizes the egg. And this is obviously impaired for men with cell phones in their pockets. There are also some reports from urologists that men who keep phones in their front pocket may have more problems with sexual performance and erectile dysfunction and libido. Now, we don't know all the reasons why this is happening, but certainly that should give us cause for great concern.
And the difficulty is, Deborah, that so few people know what you're saying. I mean, I know
it. Well, more and more are learning it, Stan, and they're learning it because...
I'm so glad that you're getting the word out.
We are.
Right ahead.
Thank you. And just today, Link TV, which reaches over 50 million people worldwide, has posted a short video from a National Press Club event that we did on November 12th, where we brought in experts from Turkey and Yale University to talk about the impact of cell phone radiation on reproduction. At that National Press Club event, which you can find information on from our website at environmentalhealthtrust.org as well, we featured Dr. Hugh Taylor, the chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Yale University. He did a remarkable study with pregnant rodents, and he exposed them to cell phone radiation throughout the 21 days of a normal rodent pregnancy. And he found that the offspring that had been exposed to cell phone radiation showed significant evidence of damage in their brains, including difficulty performing basic learning tasks. They were more agitated. They moved more quickly. They looked like they had, in humans, what we would call adult, deficits in performance, in learning, and in memory. And he showed some specific alterations within their brains. Think about what this might mean for our population today, where pregnant women are not aware that deep within their phones it says in the BlackBerry torch, avoid contact with a pregnant abdomen or the abdomen of teenagers. It says that, but very few people are aware of it. So that's why I'm delighted to talk with you about what we're doing with Environmental Health Trust to promote awareness on this and on these other issues. The war on cancer got off on the wrong start because it focused on the wrong enemy with the wrong weapons. It did not ask the question, how can we prevent cancer? Rather, it's paid more attention and continues to focus on finding and treating the disease. Now, as someone who lost both my parents to cancer, I recognize that it's really important to find find and treat cancer. And I have enormous respect for those who spend their lives doing this. But the fact of the matter is, we see the success of prevention right now because deaths from lung cancer in the United States are falling so much that the overall cancer death rate in the United States has dropped. But the drop has been due chiefly to the decline in tobacco-related cancers. And we are still seeing an increase in liver cancer, in pancreas cancer, and we're starting to see an increase, unfortunately, in brain cancer in the young, in those age groups that may be the tip of the iceberg for cell phone-related brain cancers.
Well, certainly at one time we had television ads, anti-tobacco television ads. We seldom see them. I think I saw one a few weeks ago, and I was so surprised. You know, at one time we saw a lot of anti-tobacco ads. What are they doing with all the money they're getting from the taxation? Why aren't they spending it on advertisements? Why don't they drive up the taxes? Certainly, I hate taxes, but here is the means of saving lives.
Yeah, this is an appropriate thing.
Deborah Davis. If you have a question, 877-254-7524, 877-254-7524.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
The name is Patriot Trading Group, and the website is allamericangold.com. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President of the Patriot Trading Group, and we handle American gold for the American people because that's who we are, and that's who we care about. So if you want your portfolio to help you get the job done, or if you want your IRA to be safe from Wall Street and the paper markets and your kids' future to be protected, then call us, the Patriot Trading Group, at 800-951-0592. You'll be glad you did.
Great Plains Power has been providing reliable electrical power systems in the Rocky Mountain area since 1992. Our systems rely on the sun to help make you self-reliant for your power needs. Solar energy can be scaled to fit any situation, from complete power independence to backup power for the short term. Our expertise focuses on standalone power, but we have extensive experience with utility interactive systems as well. Custom tailored capabilities as modest as emergency lighting all the way to commercial scale power. Great Plains Power is a full service company. We service everything we sell. We provide and design turnkey packages, custom design system, and parts for do-it-yourself. With more than 20 years of specialized experience at your disposal, let us know what your power concerns or goals are. Reach us by phone or the internet. Call 303-239-9963. That's 303-239-9963. Or go to greatplainssolar.com. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings." Leviticus chapter 23, verse 1 through 3.
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Article 1, Section 10.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest this morning, Deborah Davis. If you're out in the listening audience, you have a question on this subject, 877-254-7524. 877-254-7524. And, of course, we're speaking certainly of the war on cancer and certainly the television ads I'd mentioned earlier. we used to see, not infrequently, television ads against smoking, and they seem to have cut way back on that that advertising program. What's the background? Do we have any idea why we don't see those ads on a regular basis trying to convince people to give up smoking?
Well, those ads were part of a legal settlement that was made with attorneys general of a number of states, and they were stipulated and required that the companies do them for a certain period of time. That time period has expired, so you'll see very few public service announcements any longer. So I think that it's a good point to note that on some occasion taxes can be constructive, and tobacco taxes have been one of the most successful. We talk about sin taxes, and that tobacco is the one that we can all agree on. What I point out in my book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer, is that we could have done this 30 or 40 years earlier. But, of course, then there would not have been the tremendous amount of money generated from the sales of tobacco. Tobacco is a very productive and profitable enterprise for decades. At one point in the administration of President Jimmy Carter, tobacco was responsible for 70 to 90% of the exported economy of the southern states. And so there's a very interesting story I tell in the book. Joseph Califano was the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. And he, with pressure from his children and doctors, decided that he had to stop smoking himself. And the tobacco, he declared, was public enemy number one. I actually wondered, as someone who worked in the Carter administration, whether a requirement for the job was to be a smoker. Because at the time that President Carter was in office, the director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences was a 2 to 3 pack-a-day smoker. The director of the Health, Education, and Welfare, Joe Califano, was a heavy smoker as well. And when you went to high-level meetings, they were full of smoke. But in fact, these gentlemen both figured out that they had to give up smoking. And when Califano publicly said in 1978 that tobacco was public enemy number one, the Southern Democrats went after him, and he basically was fired.
Well, basically, I know that when the tobacco companies started selling less tobacco in this country, then they began moving into other countries, and they had an active campaign to increase smoking certainly in Asia. Have they succeeded in addicting people throughout the world as they lost their foundation here in America?
Absolutely. In fact, we estimate that there will be more than 1 million lung cancer deaths soon around the world today. And unfortunately, many, many of them are now occurring in developing countries like China. Now, China and Russia are highly problematic because tobacco is state-run. And I have spoken to ministers in those countries who said, we prefer to get the money now. And that way, in fact, people will be dying sooner. And that's a very, I think, crass approach to this problem. And I think it's one that those of us concerned with public health simply cannot in any way condone.
And yet there really is an effort on the part of people in China saying, look, we've got too many people. We've got 1.3 billion people here. We want to get rid of them, and cancer is a very good means. They got to die of something. And people say that nobody could feel that crass, and I will tell you they do. If you have not seen our treatise or heard our 4-tape set, The New Order of the Barbarians, you need to understand they know exactly what they're doing. Well, we have a caller. Who's calling in?
Good morning, Dr. Stan. This is Wynn giving you a call from Denver.
Yes, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I have two questions, actually. The first question relates to cell phones. Actually, both relate to cell phones. But I use a 3G iPhone myself, and so I'm wondering, actually, is there a difference, a quantitative difference, between the radiation output when these types of phones are used on some of the higher band frequencies, for example, the 3G versus using them on some of the lower band frequencies? That's the first question.
Well, that's a good question. The FCC website itself says that the specific absorption rate, which is the measure of the worst case of radiation, really doesn't indicate the radiation exposures from a phone. And you're quite correct. At some of the higher bands, you can get a greater amount of radiation. But the real issue, I think, is not the amount of the radiation, but its modulation. And by that I mean whether it's a pulsed signal. You know, the body requires things to be steady and continuous for our health. And when you get a signal that's zap, 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 which is what happens with cell phone signals, we think that that's more highly disruptive biologically. So even power is one issue, frequency is another, and the signal pace or modulation is yet another factor. So the FCC says that the most effective means to reduce exposure are to hold the cell phone away from the head or body and to use a speaker phone or hands-free accessory. That's on their website. These measures, okay, they say, will generally have much more impact on RF energy absorption than the small difference in the specific absorption rate between individual cell phones.
I see. Okay, so then my next question would be, I heard you say, doctor, that they were recommending at least 10 millimeters, which is about a 40th of an inch. Is that the minimum? I'm assuming that's the minimum distance. What would you say would be probably a good maximum distance that these phones...
Well, actually, I don't agree that 10 millimeters is adequate, and it's actually more like about a half an inch. But the fact is, okay, it's not, in my opinion, you need to hold the phone a few inches away. And you can put it on the desk, or ideally, just put it on whatever surface you may, and in a car... The only safe way to use a phone is when it's running through your car antenna, and you can buy adapters to do this. So even if you have an older car, all the new cars come with it, but they come with a lot of other stuff that you may not necessarily want. And the way to use a cell phone in a car, if you must, is only safely when you have the antenna going through the car. Otherwise, your head becomes the antenna.
Right. Okay. Then my second question is, once these telephones, is there a greater pulsation that happens when the phone is actually in use versus when it's, I guess you can use the word idle, in other words, when it's not being used?
Well, American phones are programmed by the software that every 900 milliseconds, that's every 0.9 seconds, they look for the signal from the tower. That's how our phones are programmed. That's a software issue. It could be changed very easily. What that means is that even when you're not using it, at least basically every second, you're getting a signal, and you're getting, therefore, a peak of exposure. And the phone is saying, where are you, tower? And the tower is saying, where are you, phone? Now, when you're on the phone,
Ever. We'll be back in just a moment. Again, our number 877-254-7524.
What? Good, clean, delicious water that's alkaline high pH that I can make in my own home? And I don't have to carry in all those heavy bottles or taste the water. You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. With a Kangen water machine at your fingertips, you and your family can have clean, delicious, ionized, alkaline, high pH Kangen water. And so much more. Change your water, change your life. Call Rebecca Starnes at 720-209-9017. Again, 720-209-9017.
Square Root Construction is pleased to help support the American Freedom Network by offering a high-quality custom deck construction services. Established in 1990, Square Root Construction has been building high-quality decks and other types of outdoor living projects all along the Northern Front Range. We are licensed, insured, and have all the experience, knowledge, and skills to help you create the outdoor living oasis of your dreams. For your free consultation and no-obligation quote, give Doug a call at 303-517-8742 or visit us on the web at squareroofconstruction.com.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat and Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
Well, Dr. Stan here, and our guest this morning, Kevin Davis. We had a caller, and I was in the middle of answering a question. If you have a question you'd like to ask, our number 877-254-7524. Deborah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go right ahead.
No, I was just saying that there's a very, very varying views that have been expressed by the U.S. government here. And we have, therefore, the public is quite confused. And so long as the public is confused, so long as we have doubt, then things will continue as they are. The National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences has a study underway that will not have results until 2014, and they say that current scientific evidence has not conclusively linked cell phone use with any adverse health problems, but more research is needed. The FDA says that the safety of these machines has been assumed to be correct and that studies on biological changes have not been replicated, and therefore we don't know whether or not phones are good or bad, and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control takes a similar position. Now, the FCC website, as I indicated to you, does say if you want to reduce exposure, use a headset or a speakerphone, and more recently they advise be careful of cases, because metal cases can worsen your exposure. And that's why, again, the Pong case has been shown in independent testing to reduce that exposure. Now, the Federal Aviation Administration is about to accept cell phones on airplanes, by the way. I think
God
that's
help
going
us.
To be.
Anyway, we do have another caller. Who's calling in?
Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
I got a number of questions. I'd like to hear you address them. Number one, even though Laetrile may not be the perfect thing, there's been numerous books written that it does have strong anti-cancer effects. I'd like you to talk about that if you can. Number two, there was a Dr. William Kelly who spent a lot of his life studying the relationship between having a strong pancreas and digestive enzymes. And like I said, he was a doctor who studied this, and there's been numerous stuff since then about the relationship between that and its ability to de-shield cancer cells so that your immune system can recognize them.
Well, I really don't think that is quite apropos to what we're talking about
okay.
this morning. You want to give me a call sometime when we just have an open line. We'd be glad to discuss those things.
Okay,
really
that's fine,
too. Talking about the causes of cancer rather than the treatment for it. I don't know whether Dr. Davis wants to comment on that.
Well, let me just say this about, there are a number of natural products, including materials that was worked on by Mirko Beljanski, a distinguished French researcher, whose treatment apparently extended the life of François Mitterrand when he was president of France and supposed to be dying of prostate cancer, and Beljanski's treatment is reported to have extended his life by several years. He used a number of natural products that are now being researched, including Pau Pereira and Rauwolfia vomitaria. Laetrile is extracted from almonds or apricot kernels, and it may have some anti-cancer properties, but the problem has been that there has never been successful, serious, independent research on these agents, because when you cannot patent a product, because it comes from natural materials, as Laetrile does, as Talperera, and these things, you can only control them in a limited way, the profit margin from advocating natural products is so much smaller than the profit margin from the synthetic chemotherapy agents, that even though the people doing the research have good intentions, what they don't necessarily recognize and cannot control is that the incentives in the market for developing a new synthetic chemotherapy drug are so much greater than incentives to take a natural product. And in fact, one of the problems with Laetrile is it naturally contains a certain amount of cyanide, and when people are already compromised, you can get, and there have been cases in the report of cyanide poisoning with over-treatment and overdose. So the fact is there has been very little independent research on these natural products, and that is a serious problem, so that studies have been started by the U.S. Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, but that is a really very, very poorly funded part of the government. And if you look at the funding for that small agency compared to the funding for the Cancer Institute, which is more than $5 billion, you can see right away that there's just a real profound difference in the playing field here.
Okay,
no
thank
incentive.
You. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, fine. Do we have another caller? Go ahead.
I was wondering if she has any information on the dangers of the cell phone towers and the RF that they
good radiate. Point. What about the cell phone towers? Should people be concerned if they have one close at hand?
It depends on line of sight from the top of the tower and the antennas. If you are within 200 to 300 feet of the line of sight of the tower, from where the antenna is, then that is actually not a good idea. And the Indian government has recently issued a host of recommendations about sighting of towers. The problem is a serious one, particularly in dense urban areas where you don't have the option necessarily to move. And it's certainly not something that we can do much about right now, because Congress passed a law in 1996 that said that sighting of towers cannot consider possible health effects. And that law makes it very difficult for people to take action. But in certain areas, California and Oregon and Washington State, there has been successful efforts to control where towers are located.
We're going to have to let you go. We're out of time. I want to thank you so much, Deborah. Fascinating program. I learned a great deal this morning. I hope our listeners did as well. Appreciate everything you're doing to try to get the information out, and I hope we can get you onto our afternoon program and our weekend program as well. I want all of my listeners to hear what you have to say.
Well, thank you very much, Stan, and please let me know if there will be a link to any of these programs, because we can put that on our website. Our website, again, environmentalhealthtrust.org.
God bless. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness of him and cried out, saying, This was he of whom I said, He who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 14 and 15.
Article 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Fort Collins Radiator Shop reminds listeners the effects of child abuse are devastating. For those who survived, the pain inflicted upon them as children will often influence their entire lives. If you or someone you know needs help, contact your local authorities immediately. This message from Fort Collins Radiator Shop, 417 Jefferson Street in Fort Collins. For all your radiator repair needs, they have 47 years of experience, family owned and operated. Call 970-482-6783. That's 970-482-6783.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat and Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
Well, Dr. Stan, just commenting briefly on what we were talking on today. Some years ago, I guess must have been 30 years ago, I talked to the number one man in cancer chemotherapy research at the National Cancer Institute, division of NIH. And he personally told me that Laetrile worked. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't the best thing, but it was far better than any of the chemotherapy they had. He was the number one man in cancer chemotherapy research. And I said to him, what about the Sloan Kettering Institute study that showed that Laetrile wasn't effective? And he said that was specifically rigged intentionally so to show it didn't work. But it's better than anything we have. Now, this was 30 years ago. We have better things today than Laetrile. We do carry Ed Griffin's wonderful book, A World Without Cancer. You can get that by calling 1-800-544-8927. Ed Griffin's A World Without Cancer. We recommend it. Of course, we have other books. We have Cancer Outside the Box, Cancer Outside the Box, and that goes into all the various treatments which are available, which, of course, are not allowed in America. They simply outlawed them. We have a four-tape set on Laetrile. We have a four-tape set on why do we still have cancer? Why do we still have cancer? Because they want it, because it's killing people. And then now they've transferred their efforts to other countries, and they're killing millions of people in China and in India and all throughout the world with cigarettes made in America. And why doesn't the government intervene? Because it's been taken over by evil and wicked people. If you've never heard the four CD sets, The New Order of the Barbarians, The New Order of the Barbarians, you need to get it, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I'll simply close with an article out of the European Times. I just got it today. Whether it's real or not, I do not know. But basically, this came out on the 26th of January and said this. A sobering clinical alert issued by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Russia this afternoon warned diplomatic personnel and civilian workers currently residing in the United States that an imminent terror attack should be expected to occur during the next fortnight up to and including the 12th of February. And then they simply go on to mention that recently somebody has pulled $114 billion out of our largest banks. In other words, people with a great deal of money are suddenly pulling their money out of our largest banks. And this is nothing like this has happened going back until September 11th of 2001. Somebody knows something's going to happen. I don't know whether it's going to happen, but make your thoughts accordingly. And just hope and pray that this article out of the European Times is not accurate, that there's nothing to worry about. But I'm simply passing it along to you for what it's worth. At least in Russia, they're warning their people here in the United States to be prepared for a major cataclysmic event in the next couple of weeks. Hope and pray that it's wrong. Well, this is the time I need to remind you that my ministry is primarily listener-supported. If you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to hear from you. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or you can certainly get the various products that we have. If you'd like a free newsletter, if you'd like a free catalog, we'll be glad to send it to you. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927, because America is at war. We're under attack today from within. Go until tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you.
Now you can reach the American Freedom Network at our new P.O. Box, 1750 Johnstown, Colorado, 80534, or online at AmeriFree.com.
Now this is the testimony of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not. Are you the prophet?" And he answered, "No." The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 19 through 21.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and